Welcome, true believers and newcomers alike. Spider-Man co-creator Stan Lee here. Once again, we find our hero Peter Parker, better known around the world as the Amazing Spider-Man, in a heap of trouble. But this is just the beginning, Spidey fans. So get ready for a true superhero action thriller, packed to the brim with thrills and chills, twists and turns, more supervillains than you can shake a web at, and of course, non-stop web-slinging, wall-crawling action.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
I'm doing what I enjoy doing. It's like other men like to play golf, so they play golf every chance they can. So you don't say to them, how come you're playing golf today? You played last week. It was the same with me. To me, it is such fun creating characters, writing stories. It's an exciting life. And when you do something that you know the fans seem to enjoy, that gives you such satisfaction, you don't want to stop. Being interested in what you're doing. I know my father, the poor guy, it was during the Depression, and he was out of work most of the time. So his life was shorter, and it was because there was nothing really that he was doing that could interest him. But I think if you do what really excites you, it just keeps you going as long as possible. Believe it or not, I almost never have been stuck on anything. Writing comes very easily to me. Everything else in the world is tough. But writing, I don't have any problem with that. I can't write fast enough to keep up with the things I want to say. I think whatever you do, you should do what you most want to do and what you're best at. Too many people don't really do what their heart's desire is, but they try to do something else because they think, well, it'll be easier to get a job or to make money. And if that happens, then when you're doing it, you feel like you're working. But if you do what you really want to do, you feel like you're playing. It's easier for you to do. I know I wanted to be a musician when I was young, but I had no talent for it. Wasted time trying to be a musician, I'd have either been a failure or I'd have been just an ordinary musician. But I love writing also, and it came easier to me, so I figured I'd stay with that. I think you have to do what you do best and what you enjoy. I began to realize that entertainment is very important in people's lives. Most people, almost everybody, have lives that have problems and troubles and things to worry about. And if you can entertain somebody, take his or her mind off the things that would normally be bothering them, that's a good thing to do. Mostly, I've just enjoyed everything I've been doing. And I think my professional life has been a source of much pleasure for me.
Welcome to a very special episode of Invasion of the Remake. And yeah, last week I know I promised you guys a back to normal episode, and then Stan the Man passed away. Yeah. And we definitely felt the need to talk about it. So sorry you've gone 3 weeks without a regular episode, but that's okay because we're talking about Stan Lee today. Mm-hmm. With me today, as always, is our pernicious co-host, Trish Cochran.
It's a word. Hey, everybody.
I it just It felt big. You got to use big, like, descriptive words when you're talking, and alliterative words when you're talking about Stan Lee. I've already got something prepped for Carlos. He likes it, so...
Nice.
He's half man, half machine. Oh, Carlos.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the show. Nice. Stepping in Sam's seat today.
Yes, literally. I will take Sam's soapbox, as it were, and do my best to share some memories about Stan Lee and what he meant to all of us. So.
Yeah, and I think that's what is important about this episode is, I mean, you can go anywhere to find the history of Stan Lee, and honestly, I would need several podcasts to go through 80 years of him being in the comic and entertainment business. So we're going to share some of our memories of Stan Lee and what he kind of meant to us and some of our favorite moments. And just kind of remember the man. And, you know, I was recently on the news to talk about Stan Lee, and I didn't get to do it the way I wanted to do it. They wanted to associate it to Calgary and this weird connection to Calgary through this obscure giveaway comic.
Chaos in Calgary?
Chaos in Calgary. So I didn't really get to say what I wanted to say about Stan on that. Actually, I'll run that right now.
A reprint of Amazing Spider-Man number 1 from 1969.
One of Jason Bishop's favorites here at Words and Pictures Comics.
He gets to meet the Fantastic Four for the first time.
$1,000, and it's yours.
This was Stan Lee writing.
Also a colorful presence here.
In honor of the legend.
Excelsior!
Now, with the legend leaving us, time to celebrate his Calgary connection. One of Stan Lee's most famous creations, paying us a visit.
Amazing Spider-Man Chaos in Calgary, where Peter Parker, as Spider-Man, attended the Calgary Stampede.
Heads up, Harry. You're taking the name of the Calgary Stampede much too literally.
This was 1993. Initially, this book was given away by the Calgary Police Department. It was also trying to teach kids some bike safety.
Kind of awesome.
I really like the man bolt. So indicative of Spider-Man's villains.
You're relatively new to the world of supervillains, but how are we going to slug it out if you're stampeding off in the other direction?
I have a nice picture with me and Stan on the walls, and that's really cool. I met him briefly at the Calgary Comic and Entertainment Expo.
Tries to lasso him, gets on his back, and rides him around. Yep, that's Stampede-esque.
Man, the landscape of movies and television without Stan Lee. Hell, my job. Yeah. Wouldn't exist without Stan Lee.
Then he finishes it up by hog-tying him and flipping him over to the ground.
Yeehaw! Thanks, Spidey!
The old Tucker. Global News.
Stay safely and stay off the track.
Yeah, so I didn't get to say what I wanted to say about Stan Lee on that particular segment for the news. So we're gonna share our thoughts about Stan Lee and our memories. And, you know, growing up for me, I called him Uncle Stan because he was so much a part of my upbringing. You get introduced to those Marvel characters through the animation. There was the 60s cartoon. Mm-hmm. The first Spider-Man and some of the Mary Marvel Marching Society stuff, if you were in a territory that got some of that stuff. So for me, I was just, those were my formative years with those characters. And once I was old enough to read, I was drawn to those characters in comics because of the cartoons. Mm-hmm. And even some of the live action shows, the Bill Bixby Incredible Hulk and the cheesy live action Spider-Man when they threw a net over the villains. You remember that?
The Electric Company, right?
No, that was after the Electric Company. But yes, Electric Company was also part of it. I'm glad you brought that up.
Nice. I didn't see that. I saw the Spider-Man cartoon, but I never saw live action.
Yeah.
But I watched the Hulk as a little girl. I liked watching that.
Yeah. So, you know, once I was old enough to read comics, I kept seeing, and by that point, Stan had already moved on from editor-in-chief to more of a presidential figurehead role. Actually, he was running the company for a long time, even after leaving the editor-in-chief role. But Jim Shooter was running the company at that time, and every story I read, the title of the story always said Stan Lee Presents. And I always wondered early on who Stan Lee was, and then he started narrating some of the other cartoons I watched in the early 80s when I was about 8 or 9 years old, and specifically The Incredible Hulk, where I actually got to hear Stan Lee for the first time, and he talked to the audience.
Yeah, that was his thing, is that he wanted to set the stage and give a bit of the mindset of Bruce Banner and the Hulk for the audience every single time, because he didn't feel that that character could do it on his own.
Yeah.
At least when he's with the Hulk.
Yeah, he didn't really do that with Spider-Man, although I think he showed up during the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends episode that the Hulk was actually in.
Yeah, and actually it's ironic that you say that. So this morning, I've introduced recently my youngest to Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and she's all over it. So now our kind of weekend tradition is we'll throw on a couple of those in the morning. And this was actually a few days before Stan passed away that we started this. Wow. And the one we watched just this morning was Stan. And he's like, Stan Lee here. And he literally says, we're doing this episode because fans want to know how Peter Parker and his broke friends got all their tech in their apartment. And so here's that story. And off you go. And it takes you through Tony Stark giving it to them as a gift for helping them out. So
nice. If only there's so many TV shows I needed that answer. Just regular sitcoms are like, that apartment is completely unobtainable by these people.
Yeah. If only Stan had an answer for Friends.
Mm-hmm. Not just Friends, basically every 90s sitcom. I'm looking at it going, there's no way these people can afford it.
I mean, I'm watching that cartoon. Is it just me, or was like Spider-Man the only one that had a job? Like, what did Firestar and Iceman do?
Yeah, I know. They were all, even Spider-Man only sold photos on the side. He was technically just another student.
I can't believe he made a living doing that.
Yeah.
There's no way. No way. Freelance? Yeah. I don't think so.
No. Yeah, Aunt May looking for boarders was also part of the story today. It's like, I need boarders to help pay for this place. And so she brings in two broke high school students, or university students. Thanks a lot, Peter.
I'd imagine like pulling the wrong book on the bookshelf and everything flips around. Whoa, disco pad.
Oh, that's the dream though. You go into a house, oh, I'll take this book. Oh no, something very exciting is about to happen.
Nobody ever grabs Wuthering Heights.
Exactly. But I wanted to read it. They're like, nobody will ever read this book. Actually, a lot of people read Wuthering Heights. We need a better bad book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was with him having such an ever-present part of my youth. He was Uncle Stan to me in a lot of regards because he kept talking to us as an audience and teaching those lessons. And he even did that in some of the 90s revival stuff, the 90s Fantastic Four and Iron Man, the Marvel Action Hour. He always did some little live action pieces in between, which were kind of goofy when you'd see Stan airing an episode underwater or something.
Well, and he'd guest star as himself in the 90s Spider-Man eventually. Mm-hmm. There was an episode where some multiverse collapsed or something like that. But
yeah, it was the very last episode of the 90s cartoon. And if memory serves, he was searching for MJ, who'd been lost in the multiverse, being guided around by Madame Webb, who was voiced by his real-life wife, Joan.
Yes.
Nice.
Who passed away a few years ago. About 2 years ago, I think, now. And they were together for 70 years.
An impressive amount of time.
Yeah. In fact, I will run that clip right now.
I don't believe what you're telling me. In your reality, I'm a character in fiction?
Yep,
and I'm an actor who plays you on TV. But there's someone here I knew you had to meet. He's the man who created you for fans all over the world.
And I said to Jack, what if his skin turns green?
Excuse me. I'm looking for some guy named Stan Lee.
What? Spider-Man? Pam, hold my calls for a while. I think I've finally gone crazy. Oh, man! Wow! You know, Spidey, I've always wanted to experience real web-slinging.
And I've always wanted to be appreciated as a real hero. It seems you've made me into one. Thanks.
Hey, don't mention it. After saving all of reality, where do you go from here?
To find Mary Jane. My Mary Jane. I've been told she's still alive. I can't wait to see her. You know, for so long, I've thought that I never got any breaks. But now, after all I've been through, for once, I like my life. I like myself. And for the first time ever, I wouldn't want to change anything about me.
Gee, you're definitely not the same guy I've been writing about all these years.
Well, Stan, we all have to grow up sometime, I suppose. Even us characters of fiction.
Spider-Man,
It's time to go.
Who is that exotic lady?
Oh, her? She's my ride. It's been great meeting you. Take care of yourself.
You too, Spider-Man. Farewell and good luck.
Well, I wonder how I'm supposed to get down from here. I suppose I could wait for the Fantastic Four to drop by and give me a lift.
That's Stan Lee. He's quite a guy.
I think he's truly special.
Well, Madam Webb, where to now?
Face front, true believer. We are going to find the real Mary Jane Watson.
What?
It has been a long, hard journey. And I think you are finally entitled to some happiness.
Amen to that, dear lady. Amen to that.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's because, I don't know, I think Stan really, he viewed a lot of, like, these creations that he made, like, as family. Like, that's why he was sort of very involved. I think he liked the idea of this being part of his world, his universe.
Yeah, I mean, the legacy that he's created, and literally, he's created a universe, and people regard him very much like George Lucas, who created this vast universe mm-hmm. of Star Wars, and Walt Disney. He created all these superheroes during kind of a slump for Marvel. Marvel mm-hmm. was not looking too good at that point, and DC had just had a success as National Comics at the time with the recent release of the Justice League, putting mm-hmm. all of their core characters together. And Stan just threw caution to the winds, like, oh, I got this idea, let's go for it. And that became Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. from which all sorts of things spawned. And then the next character out would have been the Amazing Spider-Man over in Amazing Fantasy 15. Yeah. And then so on. And then let's do our Justice League thing by doing the Avengers. And he had such a creative mind in trying to get these relatable characters mm-hmm. together, unlike these godlike characters over at DC. And I think that's why those characters have lasted as long as they have, is people can kind of relate to those characters a lot more than the DC characters.
Well, yeah. I think Stan was just, he's a very genuine person. That's how he comes across in the fleeting interactions I've had with him. Mm-hmm. He always seemed very sincere and very genuine. And I recently read a digital version of Amazing Fantasy 15, and that comes through in how he tells his stories as well. And it's like the Peter Parker that he plunks into high school is totally being picked on, and you can relate to that, and we've all known a person like that. And then he talks about his relationship with Uncle Ben and Aunt May and just what they meant to him, and you can see why they would inform what Spider-Man is like as a person and how he carries himself. And he did that with all of his characters. And I think that's what the hook was, is that people mm-hmm. could immediately relate to, outside of maybe a Tony Stark, every single one of those characters.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four was a bickering family.
Yep. Yeah.
Tony Stark, actually, they handled the theme of alcoholism over there. That was a heavy theme. The X-Men mm-hmm. was thinly veiled commentary about racism.
Yep. Yes. Racism and then the registration and stuff. So we're talking Holocaust, genocide.
Yeah, and we're talking, an old Jewish man, Stan Lee, whose connection. Yeah, he served, actually, in World War II.
Well, and just the fact that he changed his name from the more Jewish Lieber to Stan Lee just for the sake of buy-in from.
That was also because at the time, comics weren't seen as a serious form of literature, and he was embarrassed by it. Mm-hmm. You know, he went in as an intern in his late teens, and by 19 he was editor-in-chief, but he was kind of embarrassed. He'd say he was a writer, but he wouldn't say what he was a writer of.
Yeah.
And he would ran under the pseudonym of Stan Lee.
Yeah, saving his real name for his great American novel
but
kind
honestly,
of thing.
Yeah. Honestly, as we've seen in sort of other areas, like with novels, like sometimes changing your name to something is the only way to get stuff published. Like J.K. Rowling, hiding her name as a non-gendered name helped get that book published.
Yeah.
So having a non-Jewish name would ultimately also help him in that particular climate.
Sure. Well, I mean, publishing in general, especially back then, it was very much run by either the Italian mob or a lot of Jewish immigrants. It was also part of the publishing era of that time. So there's a whole interesting story that'd make a good movie all by itself.
Yeah.
Allegedly, they are making a movie of that.
Oh, I'm sure.
When you're talking about relatable characters, there's also, how he constructs these characters. Like when you, Peter Parker bitten by a radioactive spider, if that didn't happen, like he wouldn't be Spider-Man. But the other part of it is if he was a worse person, being bit by the radioactive spider would have been a bad thing. He could have been terrorizing New York. But a lot of the stuff with Stan Lee, like he looks, the characters are really complex. But ultimately, what I think he tries to communicate a lot is like, yeah, your moral compass is what makes those powers what they are.
Yeah, and especially that particular character. I mean, yeah, anybody could get bit by that radioactive spider, probably get a really bad rash. But
yeah. Oh, yeah.
In reality, but let's say it just been anybody.
Poisoning.
But you know, that was the catalyst to the powers. But what made Spider-Man was the loss of his uncle,
mm-hmm.
and a hard learned lesson that followed that character through the rest of his years. So his origin
Absolutely.
Wasn't really the spider, it was the death of his Uncle Ben.
Well, and it's funny because like reading that issue, which is only a few pages long, but it was amazing just the economy of storytelling, because Peter, he gets bitten by the spider and his first instinct is like, I'm going to use this to get rich and famous. And he's like, he literally has a panel where he's like, aside from Uncle Ben and Aunt May, who are great people, screw the rest of them. I want nothing to do with the rest of these people. And
the world up to that point hadn't treated him very well.
No.
Yeah. Over the course of his uncle dying, he totally flips his mindset. And he's like, if I had been a better person when I had the chance, my uncle would still be alive. And I obviously chose poorly, so from here on out, I have to endeavor to be a hero kind of thing. So,
but also ultimately a lesson learned by a better person. Like some other person might be like, that might make them angrier and more vindictive towards the world. But it's that character inside is what helps as well create that.
When it was interesting because he wrote a backup story in that same issue. And it's about like this old man that rings a bell all the time. And then it's on this volcanic island and he saves ships from getting shipwrecked on this island, and the volcano finally explodes and the rest of the villagers are fleeing, and the old man says, no, I have to ring the bell, somebody might hear, and like, oh, he's gone crazy, he won't escape with us. And then Stan does this narration about the old man ringing the bell and the people on the boat seeing a light and the old man heading up towards the light. So yeah, moral choices and being a good person has always been entrenched in everything he writes, superhero or not. And I just thought that was kind of interesting that he would include this in that issue of Amazing Fantasy 15.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're so right. It's just, yeah, it's, this is the whole, the stories he tells are very, they're very human, and some of them are like, they're kind of parables in a way.
Yeah, and I don't think he ever ran out of stories to tell. Mm-mm. I think when he passed, the first thing I thought of is, oh, he's going to be back to work tomorrow. Because that man didn't rest. He never rested, despite how many people were trying to take advantage of him in his twilight years, which is kind of a sad story. But I don't want to get into a lot of those kind of negatives. It's just the elder abuse that was happening and literally stealing his blood. What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Stealing his blood.
It was honestly.
It was heartbreaking. Like I remember going to New York Comic Con and just seeing, it was almost like an overseer standing on top of this old man as they churned person after person in front of him for him to sign books. And he's there head down and scrawling away. And it was just heartbreaking. And, I guess the first personal story would be, when he came to Calgary, we made an effort to go see him, and same thing. And it's all like kind of 30 to 50 year old dudes standing there with books that they think are going to shoot up in value with Stan's signature on.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm like, hey, anybody watching Stan Lee Bay right now?
Oh, yeah, I know.
I'm sure everybody who thought they were going to get rich off Stan Lee's signature and the, just think about, he was here in Calgary, four times in the last 10 years. Well, how many people? That show was pulling in 100,000 people, and not everybody's gonna get through there. But let's say he did sign 10,000 things during the course of that weekend. Yeah. Times that by four, then times that by every city he's ever been in.
Yeah,
like okay, anybody who thinks he's gonna get rich because that signature is rare?
Oh yeah, no.
So, well, you know, and hopefully most of, like, I'd like to think a lot of them were there for sentimental reasons. I only ever got one thing signed. Mm-hmm. Never do I intend to sell it because it was for me. Yeah. I'm sure there were plenty of people in there thinking, get rich quick.
Yeah, well, and it was funny because, like I said, it was all these kind of 30 to 50-year-old dudes with stacks of books that they're trying to get rich off of. Mm-hmm. And we had actually gone to take the kids through there. Because my oldest was kind of aware as to who he was, and it was like this man that showed up in all these movies that she was watching and stuff. Nice. And I'd explained who he was, and I remember we got to the front of the line, and Stan just lit up to see these two little girls. Like, I think my youngest was like maybe 3 or 4 at the time. Mm-hmm. And he kind of stopped and he starts engaging them and talking to them. The guy who was there as one of the volunteers or whatever was kind of looking at the line, and he went to go give Stan the, hey, you got to keep the line moving. But I recognize him from my professional life, and I almost gave him the Captain America Avenger, son, just don't.
Exactly. Just that look in your eye, like going, I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah, and it was good. Like, this guy stopped in his tracks, and Stan was super grateful for just like this breeze. And it was just this magical moment that I'll take with me forever kind of thing.
Yeah, and you think about it, like, it was Stan won me over as a child, and since then, like, you got to think, like, there's several generations of kids who have now grown up and had kids who've now grown up and had kids. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of the characters that Stan created. It was still all about the kids for him. And I mean, that's what keeps me in the business of comics as well. Like, I'm a comic book retailer, and I always have a stack when kids come in, so I can hand them a comic book and be the first read. And comic books were very much part of my formative years of reading. You know, you always get those grade school books that you're forced to read, and they're really freaking boring. Mm-hmm. And then you read a Stan Lee comic book, or any comic book, really, and the vocabulary is so much bigger and so much more exciting. And I don't know how many times I would run off to go grab a dictionary to figure out what that word was.
That happened to me so many times as a kid, actually reading comic books. I'm like, I don't know what this word is. How I would never have been exposed to it if I hadn't read it.
And you wouldn't, like, and the material was compelling and interesting, so you challenge yourself to read it and understand it, and you wanted to know everything about those characters. And yeah, I remember, like, in elementary school, there was this hardcover Fantastic Four compendium, and I actually got told that I wasn't allowed to take it out of the library anymore because I'd withdrawn it so many times, and the teacher told my folks, they're like, oh, he has a one-track mind. He just likes dinosaurs and these stupid comic books.
Well, that's the fast track to a good vocabulary. I mean, dinosaurs and these comic books, you're
it's set. True. It's true. That enough was said.
There were not a lot of comic book stuff in the libraries when I was a kid.
We didn't have any.
I would sign out whatever there was, and lots of drawing books. I mean, I learned how to draw because of comic books. My first instructional book I ever bought was Stan Lee's How to Draw the Marvel Way.
Yep.
Wow.
I still have that one.
Yeah, I do too, with the art by John Buscema. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I learned a lot of things I actually wound up getting ahead of some of my art lessons, or, you know, learning perspective and stuff. I learned that through that book long before we ever got to cover it in school.
Yeah.
Cool.
I did love when DC would do the send up of that book, and they'd be like, okay, here's how you draw whatever character, and it starts with the circle and then the plot lines for the eyes and nose, and it's like, just finished. Trash yours because it never looked this good.
Recently, Chip Zdarsky did a few covers like that recently of, like, How to Draw Spider-Man, and then he'd do the lines on the mask, and nope, that's not right, scratch it out. Do it this way, nope, that's not right, scratch it out. Kind of looks like this. You'll get there.
Yeah, so
just keep
good.
Trying.
So, which is probably the true stages of artwork. Mm-hmm. A lot of erasing, a lot of...
Oh my God. And, like, even when you've done your best, absolute best job. It still looks a little off, and you can't figure out how to fix it.
Yeah. It's just too far gone.
Heartbreaking. You're like, there's something wrong. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. You're just like, all right, well. Yeah, that, it went through the funhouse mirror.
Yeah, that's what makes a truly great artist, right, is when they realize, hey, maybe I should just employ my own style.
Yes. That's so how you do it. Yeah, you're right.
So many of us never got there.
Yeah.
I know. There's just so many amazing things that, like, I mean, yeah, like, he helped educate generations of kids.
Now, I mean, we're probably going to get a lot of comments like, well, what about Steve Ditko and Jack Kirby? Yes, they had lots to contribute to these comic books, and there's some argument to say that they did a lot of the heavy lifting. I mean, as artists, yeah, they did. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they were very big creative minds. Stan, being the company man, always towed the company line, promoting the character over the creator. That's changed a lot over the years. Yeah. But Kirby did all right for himself. Like, yeah, those characters went on to create, like, billions and billions of dollars within the entertainment industry, especially moving into the films that have been popular for the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, and we're going to get for another 50?
Yeah. Well, genres in film tend to wane a lot faster than in comic books, but, you know, comic books had a big cycle too, and the superheroes have long dominated that genre, and I'm interested to see if that starts fading, because as a retailer, I've seen the popularity of superheroes in comics is waning, because they can get it, fans of that genre can just turn on their TVs now or go to the movies and experience the same thing, and without ever having to pick up a comic book, which is sad, because you know, comics are, I think, the best way to digest that stuff, because there's no budget to hit. Like, you can do anything in a comic book as long as your imagination can draw it.
Well, these things, they always lose their way and come back, right?
Yeah.
And it's a lot of Marvel's rise comes from DC just kind of spinning their wheels for a bit during that period in the 60s, and it's like, yeah, we don't really know what to do with Superman or Wonder Woman, and, you know, we'll just kind of tell our story to put out a book that month. But
yeah, it was the maturing of the story, and I think I grew up in a great era where the evolution of storytelling was evolving with me as I grew up.
Yeah.
So the stories became more complex as I was getting older. So I was just grew up in that perfect age. And I think that's why there are so many fans now that continue to read comics in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, because the stories evolved with them.
Well, really, yeah. And it's one of those where had Stan and Marvel not pushed DC as hard as they did in the late 60s, early 70s, you don't end up with, like, hard traveling heroes, and you don't end up with the Dark Knight Returns and the Watchmen and things of that nature. Just it's just an evolution kind of thing, right? So
yeah, Bill Maher, his lack of wisdom, decided to write a little blog just hours after Stan Lee passed.
Yeah,
that's was kind of reprehensible, to be honest, and really offensive to me as a retailer and anybody who loves comics in general. Here's the blog. The guy who created Spider-Man and the Hulk has died, and America's in mourning. Deep, deep mourning for a man who inspired millions to, I don't know, watch a movie, I guess. Come on, dude.
Honestly.
Someone on Reddit posted, I'm incredibly grateful I live in a world that included Stan Lee. Personally, I'm grateful I lived in a world that included oxygen and trees, but to each his own. Now I have nothing against comic books. I read them. I read them now and then when I was a kid, and I was all out of Hardy Boys. But the assumption everyone had back then, both the adults and the kids, was that comics were for kids, and when you grew up, you moved on to the big boy books without the pictures. Hey, I read books too.
Yeah.
Dick. but then 20 years or so ago, something happened. Adults decided they didn't have to give up on the kids' stuff. And so they pretended comic books were actually sophisticated literature. And because America has over 4,500 colleges, which means we need more professors than we have smart people. Some dumb people got to be professors by writing these titles like Otherness and Heterodoxy in The Silver Surfer. And now when adults are forced to do grown-up things like buy auto insurance and call it adulting and act like it's some giant struggle. I'm not saying we necessarily got stupider. The average Joe is smarter in a lot of ways than he was in, say, the 1940s when A Big Night Out was a Three Stooges short and a Carmen Miranda musical. The problem is we're using our smarts on stupid stuff. I don't think it's a huge stretch to suggest that Donald Trump could get elected in a country that thinks comic books are important. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, in the 1940s, where people were watching such mindless stuff as, I don't know, Casablanca and a few Hitchcock movies.
Yeah, and to
you
say...
You know, that those dumbed down things.
Yeah, and to say that there isn't great literature in comics is really naive of what the field is. I mean, yes, there's lots of kids' stuff. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But what did those comics teach us? They taught us morals. Captain America and Spider-Man were very much a part of my moral structure. Mm-hmm. And that was what Stan Lee was trying to partake in, you know, not to discriminate on race with X-Men. I mean, he taught us a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And to just dismiss that.
And also, like, as a girl, like, about gender, like, powerful female characters in these comic books.
Yeah. I dare say the people who read comic books are a hell of a lot smarter than the ones that didn't.
Can I? I did have a response to this when you told me you were going to talk about it. They're like, yeah, skimmed it. And yet again, Bill Marling is narcissist out. Nothing worse than a man who thinks he's smarter than everyone. True genius knows there is more knowledge out there, and they only know a small part of it. Every person I've ever met who thinks they are smarter than anyone, everyone, was a complete idiot. Those are the people that get Trump elected and not the comic book people. He is the other side of the same coin. Person who thinks he's smart, but is not.
Yeah. So, like, for somebody who said he read comic books to totally miss the point of what he was reading.
His comprehension wasn't there.
No.
So, you're saying you know more than other people, but you lack comprehension. That's the point. He can't figure out. A smart person knows that they're not smart enough to know everything. A dumb person thinks they're smarter than everyone and ignores everything pointing them to that conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I don't know why you need to open your mouth at all. Like, people are mourning someone because of the influence they had on their childhood, or because they appreciate what they brought to their favorite art form, or because they love the movies that his work inspired, who cares? Like, who are you to shit all over these people that are mourning the loss of someone?
How many people are going to be mourning you, Bill?
Yeah, like, what have you fucking contributed to this world other than snark against whoever's president at the time? I mean, do you stand for anything at all?
No.
Like, you attack both sides. So, what do you stand for, really? You don't believe in God. You don't really believe in your own country. So, what are you good for, dude?
Well, yeah, and like all always talking about, you know, pretty much you were going down both sides, but like coming down on Hillary quite a lot. And there's only one other choice, dude. You were part of the problem. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
and now you're saying, oh, I've always said it. She would have been better. No, you didn't. You know who else does that now? The current administration.
Yeah, I mean, and Stan Lee, he really understood the importance of entertainment to distract people from their problems, but he was still trying to teach them something as well. I don't know if anybody's going to remember Bill Maher for his politically correct or even his current show, but I can tell you right now, they're going to remember that comment.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I can appreciate why Bill Maher made those comments about Stan Lee, because he's like the anti-Stan Lee. He's just some cynical narcissist who wants to tear everything down and crap all over people that he thinks are lesser than him.
And offering no solutions.
Yeah. Stan was the exact opposite, where he's like, hey, let's... Like, that was literally the point of the soapbox, was because he wanted to create a sense of community and to bring people together and, you know, create something that people enjoy together. And that's the fundamental difference between the two of them, is one of them existed to just create and bring joy, and the other one exists to tear things down and promote discord. So, yeah.
Yeah, and man, there were some times where those soapboxes got pretty deep.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, there's huge themes in a lot of these comic books. Huge ones.
Yeah. But even like just his commentaries that he put in the soapbox.
Yeah, the soapbox was like a little yellow box in the letter page.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
the in case you haven't picked up on the message that we're giving you in the stories, let me put it to you in simple terms.
And always sign off Excelsior. So, you know, after he left the business and became more of a figurehead, like he spent like the last 30 years being, I think, just as importantly as being a creator of these characters, he became an ambassador of the medium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was also really important because
he's like a modern P.T. Barnum.
Yeah. And I certainly wouldn't have my current lifestyle without Stan Lee because, you know, that's my livelihood. Yeah.
And I mean, you talk about like how much he impacted people. Like I think I went to two of the panels when he was here and that place packed to the rafters every time. Just to get like a half hour, 45 minutes of just listening to Stan Lee.
Yeah, and I'm sure Stan got tired of telling the same old story of how he created Spider-Man or the Hulk and what he's told those stories over and over and over again. But at the same time, I think he still was very proud of it all. And he was very genuine and happy about all these fans of what he created.
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever really got to his head.
Well, and if he was tired of doing it, to his credit, he always told those stories with the same vigor and enthusiasm every single time.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to make a bad impression on the one person who was sitting out there who hadn't heard that story before. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a legacy that's going to last a very long time.
Oh, yeah. No, I think he's cemented. I mean, he's the only comic book creator I know with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Does Bob Kane?
I think Bob Kane does. Bob has certainly... His legacy is taken a significant kicking since...
since he passed, yeah.
Yeah.
At least he wasn't around to get the shit kicking.
Mm. Well, and that's the thing with Stan Lee, too, is that he made no bones about Ditko and Kirby being collaborators with him.
Yeah.
Kind of to go back to your earlier point. He always gave them credit, and he always kind of talked about it being a group creation, and he'd boost them. And it's certainly, you were worried about your commenters kind of bringing that up, and it's like, yeah, you know, maybe these guys didn't get as much credit as you might have thought they deserved. And you know what? They even said as much during their lifetimes. But at the end of the day, if you look back at the times, he was a far cry from being like Bob Kane was to Bill Finger. And that's I think people like to try and draw that equivalency, and it's not even close.
Yeah. I mean, people will say Stan Lee screwed Jack Kirby. Well, I mean, Jack was already working for Marvel before Stan came in.
Yeah.
So let's get that out of the way. He was already doing stuff over there. And Kirby was a very strong negotiator. He got paid a whole lot better than his contemporaries at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, you look at the legacy afterwards.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still lots of money that was probably owed the man. But he did a hell of a lot better than, say, Siegel and Schuster.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite stories, and you can find the video on YouTube, but there's a video of Stan Lee trolling Bob Kane. And now that all the backstory has been revealed and we know about Bob Kane and the genesis of Batman as it relates to Bill Finger and whose roles and Bob Kane taking credit for things that he probably shouldn't have. But it's a video of Stan interviewing Bob Kane, but he's getting him to draw stuff, and he gets him to draw like Mickey Mouse and Spider-Man, and it is fucking awesome. Awful.
I have seen it. Terrible.
Even Catwoman, he doesn't do a great job drawing.
At least looks like a 1930s style Catwoman with the tight lips and stuff. Yeah. That one wasn't so bad in comparison. But
yeah, like Spider-Man was laughable. It's like, oh.
He was not a good artist.
Stan, decades before any documentary ever came out, that this man did not create Batman by himself.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Stan was always had this friendly rivalry with Bob, because Bob wanted to live that lifestyle of Bruce Wayne. And in many ways, Stan could have been that guy.
Yeah.
And didn't do that. I mean, he was cameoed in all these movies and stuff, but I don't know if he went to seek that. I think it was just a case of everybody recognizing and wanting to give him a moment because you know, he was contributed to the creation of all these characters.
It was just part of the gig, right? Like you said, it was just his way of promoting, like, these are his kids, and it's
And that started, in 89, where he started appearing and stuff, and that was the Trial of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, well, and he was Kevin Smith did it in Mallrats,
right? Kevin Smith did it in Mallrats.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And it just kept kind of blossoming from there. Well,
and I think that was sort of a thing, too, because I can remember when, like, he started showing up in movies, and then there were some of, like, the Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. And part of what I was doing when I was watching those movies, like, when does Stan Lee come on? Like, people wanted it. That was the thing. Like, it blossomed from there, and people were like, well, it doesn't feel Marvel if Stan isn't in it.
Yeah, and, you know, he's done some voices in some of his own animated characters that he created after Marvel. Mm-hmm. He's done Teen Titans Go. He's most recently...
This place is amazing, yo.
They're really making movies about every superhero.
And it's time they make one about me. Come on, Jade Wilson's soundstage must be around here somewhere.
Hey, everybody, look at me. I'm Stan Lee, doing my subtle cameo.
Excuse me, Mr. Stan.
This is a DC movie? Oh, gee, I gotta get out of here.
The new Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, he's got a cameo in there. Nice. I mean, there was that Deadpool thing he did.
Yeah. I don't remember that one.
That cameo was in a teaser for Deadpool 2 that they did during Logan. At the beginning of Logan, it was either at the opening of the movie or post credit. I don't know what it was for, where it was in the movie exactly, but it's some guy's getting attacked in an alley and he goes into a phone booth, Superman style.
Okay.
At Deadpool. And to go and change into his super suit. But he doesn't have it underneath his clothes, so he's getting naked and
you see
pulling
his bum
on the suit.
And you're just in the glass.
You're hearing things escalate in the alley. He's almost got it on, and then bang.
He's like, oh no, oh, I'm no. late.
And then Stanley's like, nice phone booth reveal.
Yeah, it's ironic, all the cameos that he did in the last one that he did while he was alive was in Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, Jason was telling me all about that, because I'm like, I didn't know that. And then it sounds really good. And now I got to watch that, because I got to watch.
Oh, that movie.
I'll watch it just for that.
Oh, the whole movie's great.
Cool.
Hey, Stan Lee! I'm back. I don't care if it's a DC movie. I love cameos.
Not now, Stan Lee!
Excelsior!
What's your favorite Stan Lee cameo, then?
For me, that one at the end of Guardians 2, where he's been rattling off the stories and even the Watchers are getting tired of him.
Yeah.
Although I really like his Simpsons appearances as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you, Trish?
I don't know. When you talk Mallrats, I really love that part, like that cameo.
Yeah,
in that
when he's talking to Brody.
When he's talking to Brody, and it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's sort of, but he's, it was to me like an encapsulation of him imparting that knowledge and that morality, like being that guide.
Yeah.
And that seemed to be the most succinct way he ever did it.
Yeah, he's putting it to Brody in terms that he can actually understand, right?
Yeah.
I do believe it was Scott Lobdell and Chris Bacalow in Generation X, where they kind of created him, used a Stan Lee archetype as this weird spirit guide who would just kind of appear out of nowhere, give some advice and leave again, or narrate the story. And I'm kind of hoping Marvel does that more, as this informed narrator, this mysterious figure who knows everything, because I mean he was the universe is his.
Yeah,
I'd love to see that as a regular thing within the comic books. It'd be a nice nod as this mysterious cosmic being. We all know what the in-joke is.
So. Yeah.
Now he's really a mysterious cosmic being.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, there's a rumor, and I'm hoping it's true, that Stan had recorded a lot of other cameos for future films.
I heard it was 4, and I think that was before Avengers 3 came out. So that, like, I'm kind of thinking that there'll be 3 more. So you said there's some Spider-Verse stuff, which would just be voiceover. I know Deadpool 2... they couldn't get him, so they had the painting with his image on the wall.
I think they'll still, even if they run out of voice material, they'll probably do things like that, where they'll have a painting or a picture or stock footage or something.
Ooh, I'd love to see somebody like pay for something with like a Stan Lee coin. Yeah. In that universe, that's what he's on. But I don't know if we'll get the ultimate cameo, which you had proposed very long ago, where he's just a janitor, and then Thor's hammer, he's cleaning up, and Thor's hammer sitting there, and he picks it up, dusts under it, and puts it down.
I forgot about that.
I remember, because I think that's the ultimate Stan Lee cameo.
It would be, and I wish they would have done that.
They're the greatest stories ever told. Heroes show us we don't need to be perfect to do what's right. It's not about living without fear, but facing injustice. It's not about being powerful, but finding your calling when you least expect it. They show us it's okay to be vulnerable, no matter how tough you are. Because even though they're heroes, they're still human.
Discover the greatest stories ever told. Only on Netflix.
Looks like I got here just in time.
My favorite one is still, like, ironically, the one from Ben Affleck's Daredevil, where it's like young Matt Murdock kind of stops him from...
Pushes him out of the... Or gets him out of the way of the from being run over.
Yeah, because he's got his nose buried in a newspaper kind of thing. Because it was just like... It was just the perfect amount. He interacts with his character, but yet it's not gratuitous and in your face. Yeah. But it's not just kind of a Where's Waldo Easter egg either. It's just... it just felt perfect to me.
Nice.
Yeah, that's true, where it's not like it's not a joke like it was in Guardians, where... although they used it to great effect there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one makes the most sense out of, like, a lot of them, because that's sort of what people imagine his character is in that universe, is he is, like, this immortal water being type of deal. Yeah,
like, morbidly, that would have been magic for his, if that was his last cameo.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know, like, I'm kind of two minds about it. Like, I definitely think they should do whatever he did for Avengers 4. If he had one for Captain Marvel, I almost think they should just keep it as an extra feature on the DVD, and then his last one... I would love for it to be on Spider-Man Far From Home. That was always kind of his favorite son type of thing, right? So if that's his last cameo, that would be pretty cool.
Well, I think that was the most successful as kids. He loved Silver Surfer, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I think some of his best stories were Silver Surfer. Do you ever read Parable that he did with Mobius?
No.
French artist?
No.
Oh, two issues. Go seek it out. It's really good. I won't give you the storyline here, because it's been a long time since I read it.
But says Jay as he looks at me as a customer at his store. Go seek it out.
Go seek it out.
It might even be in your file when you show up.
Yeah, it could be.
we had a discussion one day, and I don't think we ever kind of came to the final conclusion of it, where Fantastic Four, they've tried booting that out a number of times, and it seems they have problems each time. And I putting my finger on why that one hasn't been working in the movies. As a comic, it works perfect, but I don't know.
Well, even in the comic books, it struggles in its popularity at times. I think because out of all of the characters he created, that one does feel a bit dated and feels a little bit old. But I think that's okay. Like, you know, the characters themselves, they're explorers, and rather than superheroes, you got the scientist and very much the nuclear family, which unfortunately isn't as normal as it used to be, you know.
Yeah, kind of, well, almost like a literal nuclear family.
I think it's just been the execution, because there has been great Fantastic Four material. Unfortunately, it's been called The Incredibles, or it's been Lost in Space type of thing.
They've shown that it can still work.
Yeah, they could definitely do it. Like, those first Tim Story movies, I think it was...
I think they got close. Like, casting wasn't great, but I think the spirit of the characters were there.
Yeah, and it was just... It's always been... And the same thing with Fan4Stick, is that they've always tried to force too much into the movies. Like, the insistence of having Doctor Doom in your Fantastic Four origin movie, I think, is the Achilles' heels.
And they've never gotten that character right on screen.
Of all the attempts, it's like, you know what? Do the FF proud and do them justice and spend some time with the relationship dynamics of, like, the couple in Reed and Sue and the best friend in Ben and the brother-in-law in Johnny. and get that right. And if you fight some mole people without having the mole men or whatever you do for your kind of...
Honestly, I mean, you know, Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom, being a school friend of Reed's at the time, you kind of see him in the first film in those formative years before they go and get the cosmic rays and, and bombarded by that. And you save the Dr. Doom story for a little bit later.
Exactly. Yeah,
that would be the second movie, not the first. Take your time telling that
story. Yeah. And so Mole Man might be ridiculous on screen, but oh, what a lot of fun.
Yeah. And whatever, right? And like, who knows? You could even just do something with like the Hulk and the Avengers. Maybe they fight them in the first movie or something because the audience will know who those characters are, right? Or some. I think the biggest falling down of Fantastic Four is that they don't pay enough attention to the family part of it and then build the story around that.
And I think Hollywood thinks that people can't relate, but that's something to aspire to, you know, to have that kind of loving family unit that can still bicker with each other and then it's okay.
Well, really, that's what they did with Captain America. They were like, people will never buy this character is what the rhetoric was, and Marvel Studios is like, no, we'll show you what makes him special, and if you don't like it, then that's a problem with you. It's not a problem with this guy, because he's a good dude. And the same thing with Fantastic Four. It's like, you can't get behind this family that loves each other, then that's your issue.
I think it will be the uphill struggle with DC's Captain Marvel Shazam movie coming up, because that one's a very similar thing, and little worried that one's going to come off as just a comedy schlick.
It's when you look at the trailer, that seems where it's aiming.
Yeah, but looking at the casting and how much time they put into not only casting his foster parents, but also the other kids in the house, I think that there's going to be a big piece of the story that, and even you can see it in that school scene that they tease where Billy doesn't want to kind of be part of the family, but yet sticks up for Freddy when he's getting picked on by the bullies and stuff like that. That'll be... Yeah.
Well, here's hoping it's just a badly cut trailer.
Yeah, well, the way I feel about DC movies these days is if the trailer looks good, I should worry. Because usually they cut a really good trailer. If they don't cut a good trailer, I'm like, oh, this might be good. I think it's the opposite effect because they've trained me to do so.
Yeah, like everything I've read and kind of seen with them going into Shazam and Aquaman actually is that
Aquaman's looking good.
Yeah, they decided to focus on the characters and the relationships and stuff like that. So,
well, I mean, if they're smart, I mean, there was such a knee-jerk reaction to do the opposite of what a Marvel was doing, and it was the wrong way to go. It's like, well, yeah, Batman should be dark and gritty, but Superman shouldn't.
Mm-hmm. No,
like Wonder Woman shouldn't. Like every character has their own feel, and you should grab onto the core of what makes those characters work. And Marvel's so good at doing that.
Yeah.
Then DC just doesn't get it. They're trying to reinvent the wheel a lot of the times.
I do feel with Wonder Woman, they did sort of get that. Like, she's sort of this shining light in this very dark situation.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, because we had it on it was just on TV as we're decorating our Christmas tree last night, and there's that scene, and it's one that never gets talked about, but where Ludendorff fires off his gas and he gasses the town that they've just saved, and that's like the darkest scene in any comic book movie ever, because like this is an act of genocide that you've had on the screen, but they've built such a good movie around it, and that movie never feels dark, and you feel for her, and you can appreciate what her reaction is, and it just feels natural, right? Whereas there's a bit of this kind of forced nihilism in Man of Steel and like Batman versus Superman for sure.
Well,
and I say that as a guy that probably likes those movies the most.
Well, that's you're exactly right with that. I mean, and it's also very much a testament when they keep that character consistent. This would crush a lesser character. That whole moment with that village, like that would just crush sort of that hope and spirit, but it's not gone for her.
Yeah. So I don't know. Hopefully they've learned their lesson over at DC, because the movie going audience seems to be pretty ravenous for superheroes at the moment. And even with the DC movies having the mixed bag reviews that they've gotten, the reception of them is still very welcome because people want to see those characters.
Yeah.
how long that's going to last, because several films in and Justice League kind of proved that the audience is getting a little tired of waiting for you to get your act together.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Just got to loop back to something. You were decorating your Christmas tree already?
Oh, absolutely. Might as well. I have all this crap sitting under my stairs, so the longer I can justify it, its existence, the better it is for it.
So. Oh, there's already several in my neighborhood got their trees up.
Okay, because I'm like, it seems soon. I just have to ask.
No, Remembrance Day is kind of our marker, so nothing before Remembrance Day. Do that one. It's deserved honor, and then, so November 12th, it's fair game.
Cool.
For the record, I'm not the driver of this impetus, but
But you're on board. You'll get on board and do it.
Yeah.
But a good choice to just have a movie playing in the background.
Yeah,
I'm down with that.
It's too bad my house, like, I just don't have the space for my big tree. Otherwise, it'd be up by now too.
Yeah, I mean, you have your good chair, but the good chair deserves to stay all year round.
Yeah, it's either that or get rid of my my kitchen table.
Well, how much do you use that?
Yeah. Well, you got your statue rack there. I can find a home for that.
Oh, I bet. You can have the rack. I'll box up the statues until it comes back.
Aw. You've been out. Damn it, Carlos. You were so close.
Yeah. My plan thwarted.
He's had his eye on that Venom statue since it popped up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, speaking of comic books, like, it's hurting gadzooks. Ack. Blammo. Things in our vocabulary we shouldn't have, but they're great.
Excelsior.
Excelsior. I love that.
It's become part of the lexicon. I couldn't tell you what it means. I think it means good journey, but it became a Stan Lee's catchphrase, and it's just everybody knows it now.
Yeah, the story is that he got tired of people ripping off his other ones, and because they could use them and kind of present them as colloquialisms or as their own,
like Nuff said.
He created Excelsior because he's like, well, there you go, nobody can steal that word because I made it up and it's mine, and it's just as much a part of Stan Lee as my signature. So
that's awesome. I did not know that. Thank you. That's great. So when in doubt, make up your own words. It's great.
But it's got such resonance and power to it. I like it. I've always liked that one.
It flows off the tongue real nice.
Yeah. And nobody says it like Stan.
Oh, and nor should they.
That's right.
Yeah, and as you were talking about, like, we were talking before we were recording, like, Stan's voice, it was so welcoming when you listen to it. Like, he has a great voice for, like, audio. It's like, Grandpa's going to tell us a story. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you talk about your viewing him as an uncle. I actually have an uncle that I was told was sick kind of the same week as Stan passed away, and my wife was making fun of me because she's like, you're way more torn up about Stan Lee passing away than you are about your uncle going to pass away kind of thing. I was like, well, Stan maybe meant more to me. I don't know.
Sometimes that happens. It's unfortunate.
It took about an hour after I learned of it. Sam's the one who texted me about it. It took a little bit, and it wasn't like, because it wasn't wholly unexpected. After Joan passed, I knew, like, I didn't think he'd be around much longer, and because that was his world, and he still wound up sticking around for another couple of years. But, you know, it was somewhat expected. Like, how long do you expect this? He's not immortal. Well, he's going to be here. But the nostalgia and just the memories started kind of flooding over me after about an hour or so, the nostalgia, and it wasn't a sad feeling. It was just, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Stan the man.
Well, it's one of those, right? Because I think she passed away when he was like 90, 92 or something like that.
Which is...
And I had the same kind of feeling.
Oh, I thought 6 months.
They'd been together for so long, and
70 years they were together.
Yeah, and...
Absolutely. She cut his hair.
Yeah, and you just kind of expected that, you know, that he would go join her sooner than later. And then when he kind of hits 95, it's like, all right, let's get you to 100, man. And, you know, we stopped traveling for a while, and it's like, maybe. And then all of a sudden he shows up here, shows up in Toronto. He's doing the convention thing again. It's like, they won't be taking him to all these cons if he's in that bad shape. So it's like, he's going to do it. He's going to make it to 100 kind of thing.
Oh, I was kind of hoping he'd make it to 100, but it wasn't a necessity either. It's interesting that he... he and Ditko were only 5 months apart mm-hmm. when they passed, the two dads of wow. Spider-Man. But and Ditko was 90 yeah. when he wow. passed. Something about creating iconic universes and characters that gives you longevity.
Sorry, I'm just going to do one bounce back to what we were talking before, like going, oh yeah, you're mocking the people who are hanging on to comic books. They're living to freaking 90 and 95, dude. Angry old white man ain't making it unless they like comic books.
That's fair. Yeah.
So, but
Tom Brevoost that's writing Spider-Man right now? Or
No, he's an editor.
He's the editor.
Yeah, it's Nick Spencer's currently writing Spider-Man and doing a bang-up job.
Yeah, so I think it was Tom talking about his last visit with Stan Lee, and it was like days, if not hours, before he passed away.
Oh, no. That was Roy Thomas.
With the Take Care of Our Boy?
Yeah, Roy Thomas was the last person to talk to Stan, and they have a long relationship, and there's a Tashin book that's coming out that's written about Stan by Roy.
Wow.
That's coming out. And I mean, Roy being the spring chicken at 70 something.
Stan could call him a youngster at that point, really.
Yeah. So very good friends, him and Roy Thomas.
Yeah. And Roy was saying that the last thing that Stan said to him was take care of our boy or take care of my boy. And he was talking about Spider-Man, which was gave me the feels.
Yeah, sure, maybe that is a separate conversation that he did have with Brevoort. So
yeah,
I think the stewardship is going to hopefully will be fine. You know, he's got a lot of kids over there at Marvel, and I think a lot of fans who will treat those characters with a lot of respect.
Well, when you talk about like ambassadorship and how he's sort of the figurehead, that's also part of it. Like he knows these characters are in the right hands because he's helped, you know, kind of steward these people into writing these stories. Mm-hmm. So it's there. That heart is in there that he decided to put in there. Like, I mean, to be involved like that, that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, and like as much as they're the evil empire and everything else, like I'm so happy that those characters that he cared for and they were always fell within a certain strata, no matter how dark or adult the stories got for the Marvel characters, they never kind of got to the areas that other popular characters would get to. And so I'm glad that Disney of all companies is the one that's holding on to that IP, and they will be the perfect kind of stewards to keep them within that.
That kind of guarantees those characters will always be with us.
Well, not only that, but and that they'll be given proper respect and that they won't be traded off for, you know, cheap pops, and we can sell
Disney's very protective of their IPs and keeping the core values of what those characters represent.
That's why they have the vault. Yeah. Remember the vault?
Yeah. I hate to break it to you folks, but you're not getting your R-rated Deadpool in the Spider-Man movie.
No.
That will be something, because, you know, now that they have Fox in the place to do R-rated movies, like, will they continue to do so with the superhero characters that they've acquired through the X-Men stuff through the Fox purchase?
Yeah, I honestly don't think so. Like, there's Bob Iger has kind of talked about there maybe being an area for it, but I think that's just kind of lip service to stop the lynch mob.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm like, will people like Deadpool less if he's not, like, flipping the bird and swearing all the time? Like,
well, you'll find out in 3 weeks.
Well, but you know, the character is very successful in comic books, and the only time they put out an R-rated comic book, the Mercury Readers comic book, the Deadpool Max, it failed. Mm-hmm. So before Deadpool came out, I was like a little worried, because I'm like, he's not like this in the comic books. He's just as irreverent, but not having to swear and be lowbrow about it. And I think there's a smarter way to do it without having to change any of that and make it more accessible, because kids love Deadpool, but they can't go to the movie.
Yeah.
Well, but they're doing a PG-13 Deadpool.
Are they?
It comes out in 3 weeks. It's essentially Deadpool. It's called The Deadpool Before Christmas.
Oh, it's like a short?
No, they've recut Deadpool 2. It's a feature-length movie. And it looks like it's going to be a takeoff of Princess Bride. So they have Fred Savage is being read a book by Deadpool. And it takes you through.
What is happening?
Yeah, it takes you through Deadpool 2. So
I don't know about this.
Well, you talk about the books. The R-rated ones didn't do well, but then the R-rated movie does. But what I don't know, in many movies I've found with some properties, when they go from the R down to a PG is when they don't work. Oh. So, I mean, Disney might put it under like under a sub company if they want to keep doing R-rated ones, but...
Well, I think there's a place for both. Like, maybe if you're going to integrate them with the regular Marvel Universe, I can see where the challenges lie with that character. But if you have his little separate thing, and then you want to bring him into the regular Marvel Universe, I think you can have both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, is it that important? Like, Deadpool is a popular character, no doubt.
Yeah.
But they have so many characters.
Sure.
Yeah,
they're going to get all the X-Men.
And just the thought of them being integrated with the regular Marvel Universe is really exciting to finally see those characters in there. If anything, I'm more excited for the Fantastic Four to be back in the universe. Because those characters, the Fantastic Four characters, I think part of why they're not working is they don't feel like any part of something bigger, and Reed being such a central part of the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
When there's so many things for them to work with that it's like, if they never developed a Deadpool movie, we could go 15 years and nobody would even notice, because it's like, oh, here's Disney's version of the X-Men, and here's their Fantastic Four, and here's their whatever, Iceman spinoff, and here, like, they're doing the externals. Like, who would have ever thought that they'd do that? So,
yeah.
I have my doubts that, and this PG-13 Deadpool is kind of, as much as it's allegedly to bring it into the Chinese market, I think it's more of a proof of concept for Disney to kind of show that they can do something with Ryan Reynolds if they want to.
Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. We're still probably a year away from that deal to actually be cemented and closed properly, and Fox has still got their own slate that has been scheduled. So we'll get New Mutants for sure. We'll get Dark Phoenix for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They said basically anything that started production proper. Yeah,
X-Force probably not, I'm thinking.
Yeah, like, I would have liked X-Force to just be a Deadpool 3 kind of thing.
I think it probably would have been.
And just close out the trilogy and just kind of be done with it. Yeah. I don't know, I didn't love Deadpool 2. Like, it was already kind of...
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but I didn't have the same magic as the first one for me.
Yeah,
so. I haven't seen it because I was like, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah, it's... If you watch Deadpool 1, just pretend Cable's in it and you've seen Deadpool 2.
Yeah, but it didn't have like that central heart that the first one did.
Yeah.
You know, there was a much deeper story amongst the jokes, and I didn't feel like it was really ever present in the second one. It was more tongue in cheek action adventure movie.
Yeah, well, the first one was just that much more personal, which is ironic to say based on what the catalyst of the story is for this one, but
Yeah,
as they added on the fun toys to the movie, they lost sight of what their fundamental core was that made the first one so successful.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of those ones where it's sort of a testament in many ways where if somebody has limitations, you can get magic. But if sometimes if you have too much thrown at something, that magic goes away.
Right.
Real quick.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. Yeah. Just being able to throw any amount of money at these things takes away that creativity and the ingenuity and problem solving, right, that so many great things are born from.
Yeah,
you're right. Like, I mean, even narratively, you have to fix problems because you can't do something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those are the impetus to take the story in a different direction. That's a better direction than the one you could do if you had all this money.
Yeah, and that was, I think, the lesson that was learned by Deadpool is you can do a superhero movie on a much smaller budget and still tell an engaging story.
Yeah. Which is interesting about, like, what DC's doing with, like, the Joker movie and stuff like that. And it's, like, it's budgeted for $30 million. That thing will be in the black by the Sunday that it...
Oh, yeah.
It's opening weekend. Yeah. So
and, you know, if Disney's smart and they start seeing a significant dip in their box office, which doesn't look like it'll happen anytime soon, but that's a good way to kind of reinvigorate certain characters and maybe launch new characters as a trial run. Because, you know, most of the big guys are up on the screen now, and in some cases, those actors are moving on. So you're either recasting or you're having to introduce new characters. Yeah. And now we're kind of getting on to some of the B characters and C characters.
Or what you also do is you go back in time because you want to show them as young characters, and that's how you justify some recastings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the Black Widow movie, I think it's a great idea, but I don't think they should spend the money on bringing Scarlett Johansson into it. Just... do it as a retro movie with a new actress. And
well, her origin story is so, like, I'd love to see that movie.
Exactly.
And so, like, a young Black Widow, how she gets into it, that would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And just recast it for reasons. Well, and off you go.
Yeah, I mean, recast it with just because. I mean,
in some cases, you think maybe that might be the good way to go because Scarlett hasn't proven to be the box office draw in when she's a lead actress.
Ironically, she does way better than the boys. Yeah. Like compared to like Hemsworth, it's bomb after bomb. Chris Evans,
Evans
open stuff. Yeah,
Evans. I think he's tried opening a number of times, and when it's not Marvel,
even Robert Downey Jr. for that matter of fact. Like Sherlock Holmes is like the only other thing I can think of that did well.
Well, and it's only because he's there with Jude Law and Guy Ritchie's directing it. That's it.
True.
You take away Jude, and you take away Guy. I don't know,
and that second one was pretty terrible. So
it is terrible.
So I don't know if I'd even throw Sherlock in there. Good one.
Yeah. Well, it is terrible, but it also was able to cruise on the goodwill of the first one.
I guess we'll see what number three can do. Isn't that this year or next year?
I think it's next year.
I don't know if it's Christmas or summer, but it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, like honestly, I think he's kind of the only one that you can't recast. And Captain America, I think the smart play is to just have it be a legacy type character.
Yeah,
where you pass it on.
That would be cool.
Well, I mean, the building blocks for that have been sitting there for a little while. I mean, they've done it in comic books with both Bucky and Falcon, so both of them are sitting there.
Yeah.
What's great is watching Bucky. Like, I mean, they introduced the Winter Soldier, and I didn't think at any point I'd be like, oh, yeah, one of my favorite characters. I don't know how. But there it is. Like, a good casting can do you an amazing amount of good.
Exactly.
But, sorry, one thing I didn't mention before, when Stanley was talking, like, some of the origins of characters, like, bitten by a radioactive spider, and then, like, who he is makes you is. Who, when they were a kid, didn't hear some of these origin stories and like, oh my god, wouldn't it be amazing if I got like irradiated and stuff happened to me?
Yeah.
Like,
I think you imagine what you do with talked the... about that in the playground and say, hey, how amazing would that be?
Or who you would want to be? Like, which powers did you want to
not
have?
Considering that you would probably just you would either get really sick or die.
Oh yeah, no.
In reality,
like that one joke is like, oh, do I have superpowers? No, you have cancer. But it would be like, and you would also kind of debate like which were the better powers to have. What would be optimal to have? I mean, that's the dream.
It's true. I just remember I never wanted to be the Hulk. It just seemed like a sad existence.
I always love that. Like, he's my favorite Marvel character, but yeah.
The ending of every show.
I would love the strength, but I wouldn't want to be the Hulk.
The little piano tune at the end. Bling, bling, bling,
so
bling.
Sad. Yeah.
Bling,
bling.
He just seems so alone.
For him and the Thing, I always had such empathy for those characters. Because they're tragic characters.
Yeah.
And they still kind of, well, at least the Thing still overcomes some of these sadder elements of the character because he's got self-esteem issues.
Well, I mean, the Hulk only comes out every once in a while, but the Thing, that's what he is all the time.
Hulk's got a lot of rage of Hulk.
Yeah. A lot of anger. Yeah, no Hulk for me.
Yeah. Spider-Man's powers looked like the most fun.
I did have questions about how he was in the desert and still able to swing around.
Oh.
The 60s cartoon.
I was like, why is this still happening?
I don't know. There's a lot more substance to the clouds in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. In fact, we were just cleaning stuff up and forget what the heck I was going through. Maybe old comics that Jay had given the kids and stuff like that. But I was flipping through. I must have been flipping through a Spider-Man comic. But she busted me sitting there singing the old jazz songs from the 60s Spider-Man cartoon as I was flipping through these books. She's like, do you need me to leave you alone?
I love the music. And then the background was always the same flashing lights and the same people doing the same four moves.
Yeah.
Of the... the most embarrassing things that people can walk in on, that was probably the least among them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's a fine type of situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's other books you'd be like, oh God, I wish she caught me watching porn. You know,
singing Spider-Man. Get out! No!
Oh, no, it wasn't even that. It was like the background music.
Yeah. Were you doing, oh, and then the animation, were you doing the things where there's only four facial expressions? Eyebrows up, mouth open. Eyebrows up, mouth closed. God. Eyebrows down, mouth open. Eyebrows down, mouth closed. It was with a four.
Oh, good old days when animation sucked.
But we still watched it. There's still so many.
It had such an influence. Like, to this day, I still put pepper in my soup all the time. Because nice. There was an episode where Peter was sick and Aunt May made him eat soup with pepper in it.
Ah.
Yeah, and I remember being a kid and my sister decided to do it, and I was like, why are you copying me? And my mom called me on it, and she's like, well, you copied Spider-Man, so it's fine.
Nice. Good parenting. Oh, yeah. No, it was, and I remember some of the characters, like the rhino, when they were trying to bring that in, I was kind of excited, and I'm like, oh, no. Because I love those episodes.
Yeah, another sad character.
The rhino, and what was the guy
with
the lizard?
Why are all the super strong guys really sad characters?
Yeah. The lizard doctor guy.
Dr. Connors.
Yeah. Dr. Connors. Lizard, I liked him too.
Yeah. Those I always troll episodes. My kids when like we were watching The Amazing Spider-Man, and they have like the rhino and stuff like that. And she's like, oh, is that the rhino? I was like, yeah. And then watching the sequel, they're going to have a story where he tries to steal gold to make a statue of himself.
Like, what?
What are you talking about?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Well, it sounds dumb when you say it.
It really does.
Spider-Man.
But if you can just, like, just get into it, you're going to like it. Yeah. Just get into it. Just put the stupid by the side and just go with it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, any last thoughts you want to share about Stan Lee before we go?
I just listening to him talk, like having not being able to hear his voice say new things, it makes me sad, because it was just always nice to just hear him talk about anything. He was a lot of fun that way.
He's like you said, he's part of a very small group of people. Like, honestly, it's George Lucas, Walt Disney, and Stan Lee that created legends in our time. Mm-hmm. And so my biggest thing is I just hope that his legacy gets respected and gets carried forward in a way that would be pleasing to him.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want it marred in any kind of way.
Well, we don't want it. Ba-dum-bum. Yeah, speak of marred. but yeah, no, I mean, I think him keeping a hand in it, just people would be like, what would Stan Lee do is what they need to keep thinking when they're creating these stories.
Yeah. And just, that's a good lesson in life in general. Like, you need to make a moral decision. What would Stan Lee do?
Yeah.
Or what would he get Peter Parker to do?
Yeah. What would Stan Lee get his characters to do?
Yeah.
What is the overall meme, the overall thing, the theme of what's happening to me right now?
And you know what? The one thing that Stan Lee would tell you to do right now is to tell everybody about Invasion of the Remake, spread it out to your friends and family. I don't know if he would or not, but
we don't know if he listened.
Be an ambassador for our podcast, like Stan Lee was an ambassador for comics. And please tell everybody where to find us. We're everywhere. Just Google us and find us on your favorite podcast devices. Specifically, if you're listening to us on Radio Public, we get a little kickback from that. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have that app on Android and iOS, maybe get it, because we get a little something every time you listen to an episode of Invasion of the Remake on Radio Public. So help us out there. Regardless of where you're listening to us, leave us a 5-star rating and a short review so other people can find the show. And follow us on our social media. We're at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you'd like to email us your requests and your other thoughts and comments about the show. And I promise next week we'll get to some regular episodes again.
assuming another
hero of ours doesn't die. We've only got a handful of episodes left before our Christmas season break. And then we'll be back next season in January.
But it's kind of amazing, like 90 and 95. That's not too shabby.
Yeah.
That's
incredible
life.
Stan Lee, I mean, you think about it, almost 80 years of his life was devoted to the business of comic books and being an ambassador for them. So thank you very much, Stan Lee, for all you've given us. And hopefully you are still creating on the other side.
Yes.
Exactly.
Help us. Visit us. Make everything better.
Imagine if they give that guy some creative rights up there. That'd be amazing.
All of a sudden. Yeah. The copyright followed him into the afterlife.
That would be incredible.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us, Carlos.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Anytime.
Being here for this conversation.
Anytime.
I've been Jason.
I continue to be Trish.
And I'm Carlos.
And we are out of here.
Hey, fellas. Hey, wait, where are you going? Hey, you were supposed to be my lift home. How will I get out of here? Hey, I've got so many more stories to tell. Guys. Oh, gee.